You're listening to Bourbon on Rice, a podcast that combines a love of bourbon with a passion for music. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Bourbon on Rice. I'm your host, Chris Rice, and today we have a very special treat. We have a friend of mine, Mary Pollard. She is actually a certified bourbon steward. She's going to tell you all about that program, how she went through it, the steps that you take to get that certification. Really fascinating process. And she also goes deep into what makes Maker's Mark such a great brand and such a great bourbon. It's really interesting. And plus, we get to talk a little bit of music as well. So again, thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoy this episode. Again, please rate, review, subscribe, whatever you need to do, whatever you can do. It helps us tremendously. And again, if you'd like to be a guest, drop me a line. I'll be happy to come out and meet with you and chat with you about bourbon, about music, and let's make a podcast together. So again, folks, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please welcome Mary Pollard. Mary, thank you so much for coming out here and joining us on Bourbon on Rice.
Ah, thanks for having me.
All right. So tell everybody, what is a certified bourbon steward?
Well, a few years ago, a group of people in the bourbon industry in Kentucky sort of got together and decided that there needed to be some sort of industry standard that they could offer people for a certification, anywhere from the average drinker all the way up through the service industry, kind of like how wine has sommeliers and beer has a cicerone program. And there's the Wesset Wine Spirit Education Trust that does spirits as a whole, but there's nothing that does actual bourbon and whiskey. So they decided to create this program, and it's the only program that is recognized and promoted by the Kentucky Distillers Association, as well as the Kentucky Bourbon Trail.
Fantastic. That's really interesting. Now, is that something that everybody can sign up for? Is it, tell us about the program itself. I believe it's Stave and Thief is the name.
Stave and Thief is the company that they formed to sort of administer the exams. So there's two different levels. There's certified and there's executive. Honestly, anyone can become a certified. All you have to do is buy the book and study and take the test online and do a virtual flight and explain why you built your flight, and they'll grade it and let you know. For the executive, it's a little bit more intense. You do have to go to Kentucky and attend workshops and take your examination and build your flight in person.
Okay. So when you say build your flight, what do you remember what your flight consisted of, the bourbons? Do you have an idea?
I have an idea. I know which ones that I studied really in depth to be able to build flights. I had to build two. I cannot honestly remember. Mm-hmm. I know that one of them was on different mash bills, but I cannot honestly remember what the exact ones I chose.
I got you. Now, but you don't have to have those bourbons on hand. You don't have to physically have those and create the flight. I'm assuming you can, but for the everyday person who might not have a plethora of bourbons or might not want to buy, you know, five or six bottles to put together a flight.
No, you just have to sort of have the knowledge of the bourbons, not necessarily mm-hmm. the actual liquid in front of you.
Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. Well, I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm going to start the process myself. It's
Yay.
Something that you've inspired me to do it. I think it's really cool. We were sitting here talking beforehand and just your knowledge and expertise. But not only is it impressive, it's you can present it to a person who is not familiar with the makeup of what goes into a good bourbon and how to find that good bourbon. We were here with my wife just a moment ago, and you were giving her all sorts of options, not only as far as different bourbons, but you also told her how to drink a bourbon. How should somebody who's new to bourbon or might not be as a fan as you and I, but how should you drink? You gave my wife a really good tip, and I want you to explain
The main thing to think about when you're drinking a bourbon is don't let it touch the tip of your tongue. Unlike wine, if you're going out and doing a real wine tasting, you're going to want to dip your tongue deep into wine to try and figure out how sweet it is. With bourbon, you want to keep the tip of your tongue away from the bourbon because there are pain receptors at the tip of your tongue, kind of like how your mouth reacts to capsaicin, the same pain nerve receptors actually kind of give you a jolt, very similar with bourbon, because those nerves only really sense the proof in a bourbon mm-hmm. and nothing else. And once you have that, ooh, this is really strong alcohol, you lose all the flavor and everything else in your mouth and just focus on that.
Yeah, it kind of shocks your mouth there. And I've noticed, I was trying to sip like you were describing, kind of the side of your mouth, and it really does change the way you taste it and the way that you just kind of, your brain processes it, mm-hmm. which was neat. So that's pretty cool. So I know we tried a few here at my bar before we got started. You gave my wife some really good pointers. What's a good starter bourbon? What's a bourbon for somebody who might not be into bourbon as much as you are?
Honestly, the regular Basil Hayden is one of my go-to starters. If someone, I think they might want something a little bit smoother, a little bit sweeter, Woodford Double Oaked is a good starter because it's got that extra vanilla in it. I kind of, for a beginner, try to find stuff that's a lower proof. Stick away from anything that is a rye, because that spice kind of can get people on top of the proof. Mm-hmm. So I look for higher corn mash bills and maybe even some wheated, just to kind of get that little bit more of a sweet finish, until I figure out exactly their likings and can sort of then steer in one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm. Which was really cool, listening to what you were saying with Erin and trying to find out where she is. You found out that she enjoyed red wine, so you were kind of working backwards. You said, I understand what you like, now let me see if I can find it. We ended up, Buffalo Trace was the winner, I believe, of the day, which is a good one to try. If you haven't tried that, Buffalo Trace is always great.
If you can find it.
If you can find it, exactly. It's really hard to find right now. But Basil Hayden is a little bit easier to find, so hopefully you can pull one of those off the shelf and have those. So now that you've kind of gone over the starters, what's maybe your favorite go-to bourbon? After work, you want to sit down, what do you pour in your glass?
Honestly, if I'm going to be drinking at my house, I usually make it myself a Manhattan, mm-hmm. and I use Bullet Rye, mm-hmm. In my Manhattan. If I'm going to just sit there and sip on a bourbon, honestly, I kind of jump around. I recently got my hands on a bottle of Hibiki Harmony, and that's one of my fave whiskeys. So
that's the Japanese.
That's correct? The Japanese, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been what I've kind of gravitated towards recently. But I'll honestly jump around. I going back to Basil Hayden, I love their dark rye. Woodford Jefferson's are really good, smooth. Yeah, it depends on the day.
I gotcha. So tell me, I stink at making mixed drinks. I know how to pour bourbon, and that's about it. So what goes into a good Manhattan?
The way I make Manhattans is 2 ounces of my rye, and then 1 ounce of a sweet red vermouth, a dash of bitters, and then a cherry. And I love the company Filthy makes these cherries, and they're not the maraschino. They're a darker red cherry. And I will put 2 or 3 of those in there, and I can't wait to get to the bottom of my Manhattan to eat that cherry that has just soaked up all that rye.
That sounds good. All right. Well, what's the best bourbon you've ever had? I know that's a loaded question because they're all different, but what's the absolute best bourbon you think you've ever had?
Well, I can give the textbook unicorn answer of, Pappy's.
Right.
But honestly, I like Pappy's. I'm not going to say that that's my best one I've ever had. Honestly, I'd probably go right back to the Hibiki Harmony. The Harmony is just, it's sweet, it's mellow, it's something that I feel like I can just sip on. You don't need to chill it, you don't need to put a splash of water in it, you don't need to do anything, in my opinion. It's mm-hmm. just great right out of the bottle.
That's awesome, because I've dragged my feet on trying those, but now I'm convinced I want to go get a bottle now. So we've talked about bourbon. We've talked about you're kind of bridging that gap. You really helped Erin. We've got 2 bourbons with us today. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Maker's Mark and what you do with Maker's Mark and what we have with us today.
So I love Maker's Mark in that it has a awesome family backstory. And honestly, if I get too in the weeds here, because I can go all day about Maker's Mark.
It's all right.
So if you know anything about the history of Maker's, Bill Samuels and his wife Margie started Maker's Mark in the early to mid 50s with a recipe that Bill had that was 170 years old, and he started to try and make it and it didn't quite seem right. So then he actually went into baking bread. And he used the different grains in his bread until he found the right bread, and then took that recipe and turned around and put that recipe into his bourbon. What makes his bourbon special is that instead of using just a regular wheat, he uses a red winter wheat. Takes that bite off of it, makes it a little bit smoother. But he really focused on the juice, what was in the bottle, and he let his wife have creative control over the bottle. And if you have a regular Maker's or the Maker's Cask Strength bottle in front of you, which we do, you'll notice that the bottle shape is a little bit different than any other type of bottle. And that's because she collected 19th century cognac bottles. And so she mimicked that shape in their bottle. She designed the label, which is all hand cut to this day. And she came up with the signature red wax on the seal, which all of this actually got her into the Kentucky Bourbon Hall of Fame for her signature bottle, which has not changed. And then the Maker's Mark name actually came from, she was obsessed with like the Peter Whitesmiths and how they put a Maker's Mark on what is considered their best product.
Okay.
And she actually created a Maker's Mark. And it is a little stamp that's a circle and it has an SIV, which is S and then the Roman numeral 4. S for their last name and then 4, because at the time she believed that her husband was the fourth generation distiller in their family. Turns out later down the road they found out he was actually the sixth generation distiller. But they stuck with the SIV.
I was always curious about what that meant. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So in the whole time, the juice and Maker's Mark has not changed. The recipe, the mash bill, the column stills, they get the water off-site. Nothing has changed in Maker's Mark. They still, to this day, hand rotate all of their barrels in the warehouse. They make sure that all of their barrels get the exact same amount of exposure to everywhere in their rick house. They have to have at least 3 years on the top and all this other stuff, which is crazy, but it's a way that they ensure that they don't end up with honey barrels, which are like the like super aged barrels that are better than the other barrels.
Right.
Because they may have been near a window and got extra sun, and therefore the wood expanded and contracted and aged the bourbon a little different. They want all of their bottles to be aged the exact same time, exact same flavors. They actually don't age to a year. Their goal is 7 years, but they age to taste. So they like pull and they're constantly tasting their barrels to make sure that it gets exactly the aging that they want to get the flavor profile correct. So they have really strict standards, very baselined. And then they handed it over to their son, and he actually was told, don't mess up when he got the reins handed to him. And because everything was so set in stone, he didn't really have a whole lot of movement as to what he could change within the bourbon. So he decided to actually take the cask strength and play around with different wood finishings. He had five different woods that he had come up with that he felt were complementary to their bourbons. And he decided that 10 staves per barrel would give the right amount of wood exposure. And on his 46th try, he came out with what he loved, and he ended up releasing it as Maker's 46. Fast forward a little bit longer, and his son is now in charge, and Rob, his claim to fame was to take that same philosophy of, we're not going to change anything up. We're going to take the cask strength, we're going to take these same five wood, and we're going to have these same 10, but we're going to take that and make it an infinite number of finishings by alternating which staves are in here, and I'm going to let retailers and restaurants actually pick what they would like.
Okay.
So he created the private selection. So in the state of Virginia, we don't actually have real retailers like other states do. Mm-hmm. Our alcohol beverage consumption is strictly regulated by the Virginia ABC. So the Virginia ABC has actually gone in and started doing private selections with Maker's Mark. So last year they released 5. This year they released 2. And I brought a bottle of each of those. So we have in front of us a bottle of the Maker's Mark Private Selection for Virginia, Smooth and Spicy, and a bottle of the Hint of Chocolate.
Okay. So let's dive right in. So if you are able to get to the ABC stores, you were telling me that they're just, once they're done. They
yeah.
don't restock. They don't do, so they have, it's a very limited supply. So if you see these, we're going to give you some tasting notes on it. So which one do you want to start with?
You want to start with the Smooth and Spicy?
Sure.
So this one, they say that you're supposed to get a lot of ripe fruit on the nose, so.
Okay, I can get that. Now, I don't have a great sense of smell, but I've always been able to pick up on bourbon. And I can actually, if you tell me what I'm smelling, if you tell me what I'm looking for, what I'm trying to find, I pick up on it. So it does smell sweeter.
Almost like a peach or something. Like definitely sweet fruit. The flavor is supposed to have a lot of toffee and vanilla, some mild tobacco, and some subtle baking spices.
Hmm. That's good. It's a bit stronger than Maker's. This is what?
111.
111 proof. Mm-hmm. So no, it's good. I can pick up on some of those notes, but that's good. So this is the Smooth and Spicy.
So definitely a lot of toffee.
Yeah. It's a bit more rich than what I was anticipating, but no, that's really good. All right, so let's try the Hint of Chocolate. So what are the tasting and smelling notes that we should be looking for with the Hint of Chocolate?
So on the nose, it's supposed to have a lot of ripe apple and dark chocolate, and I totally smell like a baking chocolate.
Yeah, like it's not a sweet, like you mentioned earlier, it's not like a Hershey bar type chocolate. Mm-mm. It's definitely more of a, you know, baking chocolate.
I spent some time in Peru and went to a chocolate factory, and it smells like the roasted cocoa beans to me.
Okay. Now see, I like this one more than the Smooth and Spicy. I think that one, it's a little less. No, it's 111. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that same strong, it's...
The Smooth and Spicy had a warmer, lasting finish. This is more like a clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Which is crazy since it's the same everything, except for the finishing staves.
Yeah, which I think is really neat that you can, you know, go in and try these different ones. It's part of why I've always enjoyed bourbon is that you can... No matter what you do, what you like, you can try so many different bourbons and really find what you like. So that's really good. Thanks for providing. I know it's Bourbon on Rice, but I'm not providing any of the bourbon again. It seems to be that all of the Bourbon on Rice is I rarely ever provide the bourbon. So this is just a way of getting free bourbon from my friends. So the other half of Bourbon on Rice is music. Always like to bring in some music to it. So musically, what do you like?
Honestly, my tastes are kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to go in my car right now, I have XM radio, and I've got a 40s station, a 50s station, a 60s station, a 70s, an 80s, a 90s, an R&B, a Broadway, you name it.
So it is all over the map. A lot of people say I'm all over the map, but they're not that all over the map. Not starting all the way back in the 40s.
Oh, yeah. I will flip around. My everyday listening would probably be either 70s or modern country.
Modern country, okay.
I'm a huge Beatles fan.
Okay.
Have been since I was a kid. Don't know why, but I mean, 4 or 5 years old, I just grabbed onto the Beatles and just went with it, and they were my band.
They seem to be like a popular band. They seem to be doing okay for themselves. So can you introduce us to maybe an artist or a band that we might not be familiar with that we can take a deep dive into Spotify? Anybody that you can open the doors?
Honestly, I've kind of been recently on a Cody Jinx.
Cody Jinx, yeah, nice. Why Cody Jinx? I know you like the modern country, but why Cody Jinx?
I don't know. Honestly, like sometimes I'll just be in a mood where it's like I don't know what I want to listen to. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell Alexa to play Cody Jinx, and she'll just go off, and it's just every song, it'll just kind of hit me like, oh, this is the mood I'm in. This is where I want to be.
I got you. So Cody Jinx, any particular song that strikes you, or is it just like you were saying that everything kind of speaks to you?
Yeah, his whole sound just vibes.
I got it. I got you.
I'm drawing a blank right now, but it's the. Hippies and the Cowboys, is that the name of the song?
I think so. I'm not a huge Cody Jinx. I don't mind my knowledge. I know of him, and I've got a couple of his songs in my Day Off playlist, which is my go-to music there on Spotify. But yeah, I've got a few of his songs on there. And now I'm going to put you on the spot here, since you are a bourbon expert. Have you ever tried to pair a song or pair a genre to a type of bourbon that you're drinking? Have you ever tried to pair something up? I don't know why anybody would ever try to do that, but it struck me when I was talking to you that you would be the person who would be able to pair a song with a bourbon.
I mean, no, but I could probably give it a shot. Looking around at your bar here, Angel's Envy, I kind of feel like that might be maybe some Miranda Lambert.
Angel's Envy, there you go. I like it. I see that. Angel's Envy is finished in a port wine barrel. It's a bit sweet, but it's also got
a little bit of spice on it.
It's got a spice there to it. So no, I got it.
Go well with her twang.
See, that's why I asked this question, because that was awesome. Like, that's the best answer anybody could have given to that question, which is an off-the-wall question. I apologize, but that's making its way into the playlist now. All right, have your musical taste changed as you gotten older, or have they just they're so expansive right now? But you say you're in the 70s and modern country right now. Have they changed?
I mean, honestly, because my grandparents always played either 40s, 50s type music or gospel, because one of my grandfathers was actually a minister.
Sure.
Hope he doesn't judge me too bad for drinking. My father and mom played a lot of my mom a lot of country, but a lot of older rock and roll.
Is that kind of what played into your 70s?
Yeah.
Your 70s.
So I think
taste,
that's what keeps me holding on to like all the older genres. But you know, growing up in school and stuff, those weren't cool. So you listen to all the hip hop and the country and the pop music and everything else and. I just never really gave up any genre.
My musical taste when I was in high school was absolutely terrible. And looking back at it now, my CD collection from back then was god-awful. But, you know, it does kind of shape who you are now. But I want to pull up, it's Hippies and Cowboys by Cody Jinx. Loud and Heavy's another one that is really good. But Must Be the Whiskey has to be... The go-to song for this one, Must Be the Whiskey, is a great song. It's got a deep country voice, too. I like that. So, before we wrap up, is there anything we missed as far as bourbon goes? I mean, is there any other recommendations you can go for people, or music or bourbon-wise, that they should check out or try? Because you're the expert here.
Honestly, for bourbon, I just feel like just keep trying. I was telling you earlier, there's four different grains, and there's a different way you can mix those grains, and you're going to get a different product every time. Also, the aging has a huge factor, since 60 to 80% of the bourbon flavor actually comes from the barrel, from the aging process. And there's so many different finishings out there. Maker's Mark's obviously doing their different finishing staves, but there's a bottle right here that's finished in port with the Angel's Envy. There's bottles that are finished in sherry casks or Madeira casks, or
you had
all
mentioned
kinds
something earlier, not to jump in, but the Jefferson.
Yeah, the Jefferson has a lot of finishing. I love the Pritchard Hills, the cab cask finished. It's really nice, a little bit more cherry and smooth on that one. just keep trying. Like, I can't recommend something general. I feel like everyone's, why Baskin Robbins makes so many flavors.
Yeah.
Everyone has different likes, and just to keep trying. There's so many different bourbons, and there's so many different flavor profiles that, I mean, even makers make so many different flavor profiles with the exact same mash bill. It blows my mind.
Well, it does me as well, and I've always enjoyed it. Mary, you have been a awesome bridge to kind of tell us what we need to know when it comes to tasting the bourbons and understanding bourbons, but you can tell that you have a vast knowledge of what goes into these bourbons and whiskeys, and so thank you so much for sharing that with us. We've got some bourbons to try. We're going to continue. Check out the Smooth and Spicy, as well as the Hint of Chocolate. Those are the two Virginia bourbons. And if send us a note. I know that some of our listeners are down in North Carolina. If North Carolina has different, you know, options, you know, let us know if you can find something and what you think of them. Because like you said, that they're released, there's different ones released everywhere.
Yeah, the private selection, I mean, a hotel chain could have their own private selection.
Oh, really?
So anywhere you are and you see a maker's private selection, buy it up, buy a glass, wherever you are.
And tell us about it. If you find a glass or you find go to the hotel or you buy a bottle, let us know about it, because we're always looking for new stuff and to find out what everybody's drinking. So, Mary, thank you so much for joining us today and providing the bourbon.
Sure.
But thank you so much.
Anytime.
All right. Thanks for listening to Bourbon on Rice, a podcast that combines a love of bourbon with a passion for music.